Hello, 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 and welcome to Oral Fixation, the podcast that takes gay music and discusses it through a 2020 lens. We have reached cycle 5 and we cannot believe it. So thank you everyone for listening along with us for 5 cycles. Wow. This episode, we discuss Hounds of Love by Kate Bush, which was released by EMI in 1985. So let's run up that hill, make a deal with God, and get cloud busting. Oh, crrr. You got any Ringwalds, Joel? Andy, how are you?
I'm good. It's cycle sank.
Cycle sank.
And I've got some thoughts about oral fix. Sorry.
Well, my thoughts are please put your phone on silent first and foremost.
But I have thoughts. I'm reflecting on oral fixation.
Musings.
And we record these episodes where we are in our life at that moment, and they're sort of a time capsule in that sense. But I just want to shout out to anyone who ever listens to our episodes and possibly just knows the information that we're searching for / gets it wrong and is screaming into their phone, no, they're not from Zimbabwe, they're from Uganda or something like that. I actually don't think we've covered an African artist, so that was a bit of an incorrect example.
We should.
House. But I am that person, and I'm not saying this because we've done inaccurate episodes. I think we do our best, but I've listened to episodes from other podcasts lately, which I will not mention, where I've been like, you have not done your research. And if anything, I am reflecting on the Pet Shop Boys episode. The Pet Shop Boys episode is one of my faves.
Right.
And at that time, I hadn't finished reading that book, which I recently completed, which is Pet Shop Boys, literally, which follows them on a world tour. And I was just basically very flippant about Chris Lowe's involvement and just crapped on for an hour about Neil Tennant. But that band is 50-50. And Chris Lowe is the shit. So shout out to Chris Lowe.
Shout out to Chris Lowe.
Next time we do a Pet Shop Boys episode, we won't say a peep about Neil and we'll just talk about Chris.
Thank you for sharing that. And I agree, we're always learning. And I think that in a way it's quite nice. I hear you, Cheech, in that if I was that you that listens that listens to like podcasts. But no, we've all been there. We've all been there when someone says something incorrect on a podcast and you're like, no, and you want to, it's almost, because it feels like a conversation that you're having, that you're privy to it, you feel like you can dive in, you want to say, no, by the way. And that feeling is very real and very valid. But also, I like that sometimes we get things wrong and or we don't pay due dust to other members of bands, like you're mentioning with Pet Shop Boys, but we're always teachable. And yeah. So I'm glad that you brought that up. And speaking of a teachable moment, would you mind switching chairs? Because that chair keeps creaking and I don't want it to be picked up.
Yeah, it is a bit loud, isn't it? We're just in, where are we today?
Well, we're... Oh. Well, speaking of time stamping things, after the vandalism, maybe it won't be my office for much longer, but we're currently in my office in beautiful Rushcutters Bay in Sydney, New South Wales, Australia. And as you say, here to kick off cycle 5. Now, I suggested the artist we were going to talk about today, and I don't know if I gave you my reasoning, but I thought I'd do it now.
Yeah, go for it.
So ever since the beginning, the first episode that we did was on Bette Midler, and she is one of my that bitches. My biggest that bitch is Gaga, but Bette is she's one of those bitches, you know. The second cycle of Oral Fixation kicked off with Khalees, who is a shared that bitch. Not one of your top 5, but she's a that bitch.
I'd say top 20. Top
okay.
15 to 20.
Okay, great.
Yeah, for sure.
Cycle 3 started with Björk, who is one of your bitches.
I mean, wow.
Cycle Four started with Robin, who is one of your bitches.
Come at me, Scandinavia.
And so, the only one of the Sinfecta that we haven't discussed of your bitches is Kate Bush. But I also just thought, how cool that every cycle of oral fixation so far kicks off with an iconic...
Icon.
Gay icon that is, as far as we know it, not necessarily queer with a capital Q or gay with a capital G or L with a capital L or whatever.
Carry on. No, come on.
Or B with a capital B or T with a capital T or plus with a capital P. Or I with a capital I or A with a capital
this
A.
This is like some funky song. There's a rhythm here. My body's moving.
But what I think it's cool that every first episode we pay homage to those female gay icons that we that have formed us.
Yeah, that have formed our music taste.
Yeah,
and what we get out of music.
And
what was the word? The sinfecta. The sin.
Well, because like trifecta is three.
Well, I know what it means, but where did you? But I've actually never heard. The
I
word.
Made it up. I
you
just made it up.
You are. Fabulous.
Sanfecta, just because like quinceañera.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So when I said Kate Bush,
yes,
you said to me, I didn't even say and what album. You said
Hounds of Love.
Hounds of Love. Now, first and foremost, let's get into this. Two things I need to. Speaking of your on your disclaimer just before, Kate Bush is not one of my bitches, but she's not one of my hounds. but I am aware of her and I think that she's fucking cool. I just don't know enough about her. Now, in the past, usually I would have at least done a quick Wikipedia scan on this, but you said to me, you said, I'm not gonna, I texted you probably about a week and a half ago and I said, I already have a lot of thoughts on this album. I didn't say whether they were good or bad. I just said to you, I've got a lot of thoughts. And you said to me that
I was
only...
on the loo. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks again for not sending that voice note that you were going to send. you said to me, I'll say nothing except for the second half of the album tells a story and can you figure it out? So because of that, I've researched Kate Bush, but on this album specifically, I haven't done that kind of...
Great.
Because I didn't want to ruin it, because I've come up with... I have my theory on what I think...
Love it.
...the second half of the album is about, but I didn't want to ruin it by diving too deep into it. So I'm hoping you can cover all the info that I might miss.
This is perfect. This is a game, and you are that theory bitch.
I am that... This is... Madonna striding through
the jungle
ha, with the guitar.
You mentioned her before I did.
That's the game.
So we've got a few games this episode. Okay, very good. Well, I am so happy that we're perfecting this quinceañera sintecata tutus.
See,
Kate Bush is my mother. Bye.
She is your... Okay.
She is...
Put a pin in that doll. More on that later.
My sister.
Right.
She is the cousin I never had.
She's your little boy's
son. I've actually
son
got a lot of cousins. In... Shout out to my cousin Claire. She is the rest of the Oprah talking about Gayle King me.
Yeah.
She's everything.
She's everything to that.
And she is the final fifth. And I'm going to say that if we go off my last FM stats, being recorded since the age of 15... Oh my gosh, that's like half my life.
That is.
It's constantly, we know who number one is, but it's a constant duel between two and three. Two and three will swap. They are neck and neck, and it's Bjork and Kate Bush.
Right. The two Bs.
And I came to both of them at the same time, I reckon around 17, 18. And just like Bjork, she sits in that vein of, she opened up worlds to me. She opened up her world, but she led me to other artists and she introduced me to her unique brand of sensibility, but gave me space, gave me the kind of permission to be like, there is a whole world of music out there that your younger self would have deemed bit too weird, bit too out there. But now that you're growing older and probably growing in the kind of maturity maybe required to enjoy this kind of music, there is so much to enjoy out there. And she was such a gateway drug to that and remains that.
And I think we'll get onto it a bit later as well. You weren't the only one with that doll. There are so many female artists that in listening to this album, I'm like, she is a direct descendant of Kate Bush.
Yes.
Literally, I've got like maybe seven.
And of all of the people that we've covered on this podcast, there's very few. I'd maybe say maybe Alton. I can't really think of another one in terms of the impact that they had on the rest of the people that we enjoy. Right. Versus, I can't name many ancestors of Kate Bush. We know, because it's documented, that she was heavily influenced by David Bowie, and she was later influenced by people like Prince, certainly Joni Mitchell. But compare that to the list of people who've been influenced by Kate Bush, the list goes on for days.
And continues.
Continues.
To this day.
Correct.
So, Hounds of Love comes where in her discography?
Hounds of Love is album number 5.
Wow. And why this album? Why now? Why this sperm?
Why? Album number 5 was released in 1985. It knocked Like a Virgin off the UK charts number 1.
I'll take a shot.
And it came to her in her early 30s. She was a child prodigy and she was discovered by a family friend who had connections at EMI Records in the 70s.
And didn't you mention in the Björk episode that there are through lines with Kate Bush and Björk in that they were both child prodigies?
Yes.
Yeah.
And kind of given the space to nurture and grow, which was really unusual and incomparable to anyone today.
How interesting that they're both 1 and 2, 2 and 3 then. Mm. Anyway, Kaz on.
She was given the space as a 16, 17-year-old to be like, okay, you finished school, just make an album. And she had this big check from the record label.
Oh.
Unheard of today, would not happen today. And she produced her first album. Within the same year, is it Irish Twins? She released her second album.
Oh, she has Irish Twin albums.
And those two albums are kind of two sides of the same coin. A brilliant example of a 17-year-old with this very natural talent. Just really, really great singer-songwriter style, female 70s. Songs.
And what are some of the hits from that?
Wuthering Heights.
Babushka.
Wow. No, album number 3.
Okay.
The Man with a Child in His Eyes.
He's here again.
Loads of stuff.
Yeah.
Mine's gone blank.
Got it.
Albums 3 and 4, Never Forever and The Dreaming. I think Babushka's from Never Forever, was when she was getting a bit weirder. So she's in her early...
A bit weirder than Wuthering Heights.
Early to mid-20s. And she's experimenting because there's new technology that's been released. And she's always been very curious about the latest cutting edge of technology at that time. Mm. But the sales weren't coming in, Dolls.
Oh.
So she had a very passionate group of fans.
But top network brass were saying
sales were slipping.
Right.
Again, full of incredible music. So many of her most famous songs are from albums 3 and 4. But she decided in her late 20s that because she'd been making music since the age of 16, 17, and she was on this record label treadmill, she needed some time off to just be Kate.
Yeah.
So she had the money now. She got money. So she built this big... She converted a barn in Kent into her own private record studio.
Oh, she went Bush.
She went full Bush. She went to Noosa. And she decided to make an album outside of record label pressures and deadlines to her own pace. And what was produced, I think it took about 2 or 3 years to make Hounds of Love in its entirety. But when it was released, it was, and is still to this day, her commercial and critical peak.
Imperial period.
For
days.
And what that says to me when I listen to it is someone who has the experience under her belt. She's already got 4 albums done and dusted, but she's now working to her own pace, on her own terms. Every single song on that album, and all albums to follow, written by Kate Bush, produced by Kate Bush, recorded by Kate Bush.
And you love that.
And I stan that.
But you've also made it very clear that you don't hate when it's not that.
Correct.
Great.
So the album to me still to this day sounds like someone who knows themselves.
Little girl.
Absolutely.
But grown woman. Grown woman.
And all the albums to follow from Hounds of Love, I wouldn't say any of them were quite as popular as Hounds of Love, but they continue to show that growth of a woman as she goes through life's phases and reaches different levels of maturity.
Yeah. Love that. Thank you for giving that brief history lesson, because it's useful for someone like me who, and I wonder if, I think, how do I put it? I think it's not common that I'm sitting in front of a 30-year-old man who stands 29. Kate Bush. I don't know if there will be many people that will stan Kate Bush as much as you stan
Kate
Bush.
Our age, yeah.
That's our age. Our age.
Yeah.
As two men in their 30s.
Yeah.
But they'll know her, like, even just running off, like, Wuthering Heights, Babushka, The Man with the Child in His Eyes, Hounds of Love.
Running up that hill.
Cloud Busting, like...
This Woman's Work.
Like, there's just, like, there is so much real estate. You know her, but I don't, like, know her. And so, is there a reason that Hounds of Love to you is her... Should we get into why she's queer?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, in that case then, let's take it from the top, Running Up That Hill.
Yeah.
The beginning, that album starts.
Well, let's take it from the top and just remind listeners that if you don't already know The Hounds of Love, which I'm assuming if you listen to this episode, you do, the album, remember it was released on vinyl, and one side is specifically four or five songs, which... I'm going to say radio friendly. They're Kate Bush radio friendly. So they were aimed at being commercial, standalone songs. That doesn't mean that they're commercial sounding. It means that Kate Bush aimed to make five standalone songs which can be enjoyed on their own. The second side is very specifically a story and tells a story end to end. So it isn't intended to be jumped in. You're not supposed to jump in and listen to one song. You give it the full go.
And that is what you said to me when you gave me this like little brief overview. And am I right in saying, just looking at the album now, there are 12 songs. Mm. I believe, and this might be my first kind of getting it right, getting it wrong. I believe that the standalone singles or songs are Running Up That Hill, Hounds of Love, The Big Sky, Mother Stands for Comfort, Cloud Busting, and then we go into the story.
Tick one.
Okay.
There you go.
Great. So let's just...
I love that you identified that without knowing. That's really great. No, that is really great. I'm really...
Sorry, but from listening to it.
Yeah.
Because I've got my theory. Yeah. Anyway, well, let's tackle the songs first and then we'll go into the story.
Okay.
So Running Up That Hill, to me, when it begins... When I heard that, I was like, fuck. I mean, obviously I knew it, but just, you know...
Tell me what you were doing? I really hope
I was walking to Woolies.
I want that for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I was walking to Woolies, and do you know what the first thing that came into my mind?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm walking to a grinder hookup.
What?
Making it clear, listeners, that I'm in a loving and committed relationship, and I wasn't, but the sound is like... Dun, dun, dun. It's like nighttime and it's foggy.
Okay.
And I'm doing something like illicit.
Okay.
And it's kind of like, it's sexy as fuck and it's gay as fuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is just a feeling I got
That's
with
so
me.
So interesting. I don't know if I've ever picked up on sexy. I've picked up, of course, on like strutty, which is also adjacent
strutty.
To gay.
Strutty is gay adjacent.
But to me, it's power. It's
a
vulnerable person who is making declarations of love, but it's powerful and it's the epitome of confidence and it's spiritual. She's making a deal with God, quite literally.
Open parentheses and close parentheses.
Absolutely. And I would put it in my top five, Kate Bush.
Okay.
I think... it certainly had an impact on pop culture. I think it's a very well-known song.
Well, because it was also covered by Placebo.
Placebo.
And actually, so Placebo covered Running Up That Hill. And then, I don't suppose you knew the Future Heads, the band The Future Heads?
Come off it.
Are they from Cov?
The Future Heads are my first experience with Kate Bush.
Really?
In my heady teens.
Yes. Well, me too.
Yes.
And interesting that they were both, like, Placebo and Future Heads were both very kind of like early 2000s.
Enemy, indie.
That.
Yeah, that.
T vibe. And those songs were resonating with those kind of then quite, even though it was indie, it was the most popular music happening in Britain at the time.
And they're both a bit emo.
Yeah.
A bit angsty.
But it was kind of ahead, Kate Bush was ahead of her time, but then through that lens,
yeah,
became, that music was relevant because it was more palatable. Yes. After she's like, it's like she'd sowed the seeds back in the day and now she was coming back,
yes,
in different forms,
yes,
to tell those stories again.
And use, I know, I understand what you're saying when you're like, look, many people our age probably aren't hugely,
maybe I'm wrong, Bush, maybe I'm wrong,
but I know for a fact that many people our age, queer and non-queer, came to Kate Bush through gateways like the Placebo cover and the Future Heads cover.
Yeah.
Because we love that music, and probably when we discovered that it was a cover, the natural thing to do was to go and find out the original.
Mm.
And it would have been like, whoa, this is nothing like what I just heard, because the covers are very different in both cases, but it's still, oh, maybe I actually want to hear a bit more of this.
Yes.
So shout out to covers.
Shout out to covers.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need them. Also shout out to every single song you think was original that you heard when you were younger is in some way borrowing or sampling something else.
Yeah, I will always love that.
Thank you, Nile Rodgers.
Thank you.
For basically every single song you've ever listened to.
Yeah, shout out.
Okay, so...
Running Up That Hill. And then the other thing I want to say on that is, sadly, wasn't there. Shout out to me not being there. But Running Up That Hill was a touchstone in the
Olympics... opening ceremony.
And they desperately wanted Kate Bush to perform at
it.
She didn't do it, more on that later, but she re-recorded it. She re-recorded it from the ground up, so she did all of the instrumentation again and her new vocals, and that version was used in 2012.
Oh. How did I forget that? Mm. To be fair, there are so many iconic moments in that opening ceremony. We could do a cycle on each half hour.
We're going to do two oral fixation episodes. One of the opening ceremony, one of the closing
ceremony. Closing.
Yes.
So
that's Running Up That Hill. Strong opener.
I mean, the strongest.
Hounds of Love. Honest opinion.
It's hard to listen to a song like Hounds of Love and have a purely subjective opinion on it, when it's just been kind of, for want of a better phrase, drilled into me.
It's your dancing queen. It's your karma chameleon.
But it's more, it's different to that. Because it's like, it's this thing that's like, so I'm the same as you. I first heard Hounds of Love from the Future Heads. I was like into the Killers, the Future Heads block party. Went to go and see the Enemy live tour. Saw it live. And to me, it was very much that, of the kind of, like, time, which was fun for, like, half an hour and then began to grate on me a lot. Then I heard the original by Kate Bush. And so, and it's so kind of, like, nuanced and layered and full of so much more than just that one cover by this band that, no offense, but hasn't...
Mm.
reach the heights that Kate Bush did.
Shout out to Kate complimenting the Placebo cover of Running Up That Hill but not saying anything about the Future Heads Sounds of Love.
Oh, really?
She just rinsed those royalties. She was
just
like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. But I can't listen to the song without the knowledge of the other
one. Of course.
So it's this weird, I love it and I'm so appreciative of it, yeah, and I understand what it represents, but at the same time, now that I've done my listening for this, I'm not going to add it to queue for another moment in my life when I want to listen to Hounds of Love.
Okay, fine. Fair enough.
But there are other songs in this album that I am adding to queue.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, look, I get that. That's your own experience. The Hounds of Love as a song makes me feel alive.
Right.
So I was stomping here in the rain in these fierce new boots that I'm wearing, looking gay as fuck in the best way possible.
Also very powerful.
Power gay. Power gay. Sports, farm, country, gay.
Meets city.
Queer. And I feel alive listening to Hounds of Love. I still don't really know the exact story. I think it's good that we're always left a little bit of room to interpret as we wish, but I just see her running and being full of love herself, like full of love and life and desperation and exhilaration and excitement and just sweat beading down her body and just feeling alive. And I love that song.
Do you know what I got that with?
That can shut the fuck up.
One sec. Whilst we edit this out. Do you know what I got that with? Big Sky.
Love that. Because we've talked about
It on this podcast in the past. And I hadn't heard that song until you said it was one of your taking off tracks. I believe we actually mentioned it in the Cleese episode.
Pause for the jet.
But just the rumba dumba 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 bumba. Still continuing my mince to Woolies.
Yes.
Sister friend, I picked up pace.
But you weren't on a grinder hookup now. You were off to church.
I was off to church. But do you ever get that? I mean, you must do. We all do. But that moment where a song, you've heard it before, but just because of all of the chemistry that's going on around you and in your life and the time of day and where you're at, everything just kind of like clicks into place.
Yes.
And even though you've heard it before, you get that like head to toe shivery, like, oh my God, this is, and it is, it's like, not that I've ever had an experience like this, but it is like coming up because it's like, just you're fizzing, you're vibrating. Yes. And I had that.
That's amazing.
It was like a sunny morning, it was Sunday, I was feeling my oats and just the kind of the rhythm of it, the power of it. And then the specific bit that I went like is when you do hear the jet go, right? It just keeps going and going and going, and you're just like, I am online.
Yes, completely online.
I'm on cloud busting nine.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's iconic.
Now we take a little bit of a downer to track four, Mother Stands for Comfort. But that track is layered. So it starts, and it's my least listened to track.
Of the whole album or just of that first
of this first five. And I'll be like, here we go, Mother Stands for Comfort's on. But then I listened to it properly walking over and I was like, do you know what? It is, it's not a bop, it's not a banger, but it's a well-constructed song with layers. I'm not always going to rush back to it, but it's a good song.
And there's something going on, not that you might not know this. Is there like something going on with Kate Bush and her mum?
Yes.
What's the tea, Christine?
At this point, I'm not entirely sure what to say about this part of her life, but her two albums later, The Red Shoes, was released in 1993, and that was profoundly informed by the death of her mother.
Right.
And later on, actually 20 years after The Hounds of Love, we'll talk about this towards the end, but her big comeback album was called Ariel, and again, that was about her grieving about mother's death. I don't really know about this time of her life, but it's clear from her art that she had a very, very close relationship with her mum.
Got it. Good. So everything was all good.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, all good.
Because this woman's work is about her mum being this icon.
Do you know, I actually think that This Woman's Work was written, it was written for a film. The name of the film loses me, but the plot of the film is about a man and a woman trying to conceive and have a baby. And the story of This Woman's Work is actually about the story of the film. So I don't know if we should read too much into that about being her life, but who's to say that it wasn't, you know, subconscious or whatever.
And there's a reason they chose Kate.
And I think... yes, but when I listen to This Woman's Work, I think of my mum.
Yeah.
It makes me think of my mum.
Oh, no, 100%. You think of your mum being that icon. It's very mummerizing. Like, you didn't realise at the time, but actually now you look at your mum and you're like, oh my God, she was actually putting in the hours.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. And also, so speaking of going back to what I was saying before, are you across Tori Amos?
Tori Amos? Firmly coming to the pod.
Firmly, truly, madly, deeply coming to the pod. She has a song called Mother.
Yes.
That is very stylistically and lyrically similar to Mother Stands for Comfort to me.
just going back to one of the first things we said, there, on the list of artists influenced by Kate Bush, Tori Amos will be somewhere like number three or number two.
I'd actually say so. Should we just quickly just rally off a couple of ones we think?
Yes.
So
Bat for Lashes.
Okay, you start with Bat for Lashes. Well, we've done Tori Amos. You say Bat for Lashes. I say Imogen Heap.
Florence and the Machine.
I do go Bjork.
Absolutely. Anoni.
I have also said here Enya, because I wasn't sure.
You love Enya.
I love Enya, but I don't know when they were, like...
I feel like Enya's kind of her own thing,
she
right?
is her own thing, but maybe it's more they're just kind of parallels rather than informing each other. They just kind
parallels,
of...
Parallels, Dolly, but there's a very, very real and profound influence on Kate Bush's work from Ireland.
And more on that when we come to my theory.
Your theory.
Yes.
Shout out to the males, because males don't get enough attention. Patrick Wolfe.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Joanna Newsom, Marine and the Diamonds, Goldfrapp.
Yes.
St. Vincent, Lady Gaga.
Oh, without a doubt. Mm. Without a doubt. Mm. If you look at, and let's get onto the visuals.
She was a visual artist.
She is a visual artist. She's visual. She's drag. In that cloud busting video, she plays
man.
A little boy in little boy drag, and I believe it.
She was a 33-year-old woman.
I believe it though. I'm like, oh, that's it. That's a little boy in the dad.
Wine. Why is it down there?
Because it was sort of making sounds on the
pause for the jets.
Pause for the pause.
Just finish her off.
Excuse me, madam. Cloudbusting,
shall we?
Is my personal favourite from this entire album. Mm-hmm. Cloudbusting means a lot to me. I just know that something good is going to happen.
Well, obviously, as we know, originally, this is Kate's cover of the Utah Saints. Iconic Cardiff outfit, Utah Saints.
Love that.
There is something, there's a reason, all jokes aside, that one line that you just said, it's playing in the background now. Mm. It's like an old dance song. But the only refrain that's used is just knowing something good is gonna happen. That anticipation. This album is all full of anticipationary moments, kind of getting from A to B and kind of feeling like something beyond you is about to kind of take place. Mm. Cloudbusting to me, I don't know the actual story of the song, but it seems to me as almost as if she's afraid that she's jinxing something.
Possibly.
Saying it could even make it happen. Like, I don't even want to think it because it could... It happen. Might be real. It could happen.
Yeah, I like that interpretation.
Thank you.
This is actually confirmed one of the main pillars, to reuse my terminology from the Iconic Robin episode, of why I love Kate Bush. The bedrock is she will fold incredibly relatable theories that we can all feel and indeed relate to into prose, into storytelling. So neither of us know what cloudbusting is really about.
No.
But I know that the line, I just know that something good is going to happen, makes me feel something.
Yeah.
And I can take that out of whatever story she's cooked up and apply it to whatever situation I want to. Mm. Same with Hands of Love. Running up that hill could be a very real story about a love affair, but it makes me feel powerful and strong and like I will achieve something.
Mm.
And that's the same with... they're completely different artists, but Dolly Parton is known for her storytelling, but her songs are so relatable in a very different way. But I just personally really cherish and love that she can tell whatever story she wants, but there's little nuggets in there that you can take away and make your own.
Isn't it so funny? Like, I know exactly what you mean. And she kind of like, I found myself being caught off guard listening to, because you, a line like, I just know that something is going to happen. Is kind of your ear is tuned to hearing something of that sort because it's all songs are about kind of, ephemeral love kind of. But then there's the line where it's like, I can't save you from the government. And it's like, wait, what?
What now?
It's like, sorry, wait, what? Hold up. What's going on? And it just kind of like...
You're making rain. And you're just in reach.
So, but what... Because the video, it's like, so what, he's made like
I think there's a story about Donald Sutherland's a real life person who like tried machine. To build a weather machine.
Right.
I actually think it's about the love of a child.
And with for his dad.
For their dad.
Yeah.
Who's a bit of like a crap inventor. You know, a bit like Belle in Beauty and the Beast.
Or Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
That. Cloudbusting is actually about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
The Kids. Yeah. It's about the kids.
Yes. Rick Moranis is credited as story.
Donald Sutherland walked so Rick Moranis could run.
So we finished side A.
But sorry, just quickly on that. I think there's something really, really beautiful about that whole thing of like a little boy looking up to his dad and he doesn't realise he's a bit of a weirdo or a loser and standing him no matter what.
Yeah.
Love that.
No, I love that.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Okay, side B.
So side A is titled... Hounds of Love. So like the whole album is, but that side is firmly the Hounds of Love. Side B is titled The Ninth Wave. Mm. Now, we can play this two ways. We can listen to your theory first, or we can listen to what I know to be the theory from what I've read, which still might not be completely true.
Well, I think it makes more sense not to be self-serving. I think it makes sense to do mine first because then I might just pick up on... You know how, like, when you go to a psychic and they're like, what's your job? And you're like, well, I work for a creative agency. And then they go, oh, yeah, I can see that in the cards. You're creative. Like, I feel like if you don't want
me to imprint on you.
Well, no, I think I'll imprint on whatever.
You won't imprint on me, darling.
So I'll say my just thing and then you can be like, these are the things I know. And then we can maybe try and find some through lines, if any.
Tell me how it made you feel. Well, that's actually a different question. Tell me what you think the story
is. Okay, broad strokes. All at once, I felt like I was listening to... I felt like I was in a score, a film score. I felt like I was in The Labyrinth. I felt like I was in a David Lynch film. I felt like there was fuckery going on beyond me, but are you purposely being so straight-faced? No, okay. So
I can't be straight-faced.
But definitely in terms of like it feeling like a story being scored at points, because there's a lot of spoken word in there and then there's just a lot of instrumental. I feel like the Hounds of Love minced so Chromatica could stride. But this is my story, okay? And it's kind of like the general story that I feel is something happens, okay? This is the overview and I'll go into the details. Something happens and something traumatic. And she's in a coma. And the story is her kind of waving in and out of consciousness and eventually coming out of the coma. Now, to go into more specifics, track by track.
Can I just tell you that I'm really enjoying this so far? I really am.
So, And I Dream of Sheep is her something... It's her, like...
She's thinking about lambs.
She's hungry for a chop. No, And I Dream of Sheep is her going into the dream, falling into the dream. Now, I haven't decided exactly why I think she's under, but under ice, she's cold. And this is the most kind of like dreamlike thing. Either she's taken like an overdose or she's under some sort of anesthesia, or knowing that Kate Bush is very kind of like outdoorsy pastoral, I wonder if she's like fallen into like a freezing cold lake or something. So then Waking the Witch is the next song, and that's kind of almost the most aggressive.
That's about literally waking up like a Wiccan practicer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, come on.
Come on, Sabrina. Come on.
Mildred, come on, wake up. Yeah.
So she's under still and like waving in and out. There's all these different voices. Iconic. Shout out to the iconic Geordie. It's like, wake up, child,
pay attention.
Yes, that to me was very Jim Henson.
Yes.
All the different voices of
Dark Crystal
Labyrinth. Anyway, so it's all of the like voices are trying to kind of like wake her up. There's something also going on, I think, with some kind of Catholic guilt.
Okay.
Thread.
It could be the Irish thing.
That more on that in a sec. Without you, without me, is her flashing into the house of her loved ones, whether it's her family or a partner. She's a ghost haunting the house because they're not there. She's not there, but they can, like, so they're, like, waiting for her to wake up, and she's kind of not physically there, so she's haunting them, and they're wondering when she's going
to
wake up.
I just want to pause you right there, and this is directly to any listeners who actually do know the story of the Ninth Wave and are listening to this in tandem with me right now. I want to know what you're thinking, because I am frothing.
Okay.
Carry on, Drew.
I'm going to keep going. Jig of Life is the most kind of upbeat portion of... I didn't know it was called the Ninth Wave, but the Ninth Wave. And like that to me is like, okay, now she's like fighting for her life. And it's all about the kind of like the rhythm, the rehabilitation. There's like a line that says, "Let me live, girl." One hand clapping, like starting to feel sensation back in her body again. And also, obviously, because it's like a jig, speaking to her Irish roots. Then Hello Earth, she's being reborn. This is literally the voices from the past, of like her deep, deep ancestors, like pagan past. The present, voices of the present, like her Catholic Irish upbringing. And then voices from the future. At the beginning, there's this weird like space, like life control to Earth thing going on. Giving her warnings, but also giving her guidance for how she's going to live her future life. And then the morning fog, she's finally waking up. It's the most kind of, it's like a really nice, calm, lovely little resolution. To me, it almost sounds like it could be, the music is like, it could be from The Sims or something. It's so kind of like sweet and trickly. And she's now more appreciative of life. And she says stuff there like, "I love you better now." And so she's going to tell all her family how much she cares for them and how much she's grateful, having gone through the experience of like maybe not having them anymore. And I'm done.
You're incredible.
Is that like, is
you
that?
You are incredible. The glow up from Madonna walking through a jungle to that. I believe you because I trust you implicitly, but I struggled at some points during that to believe that you did not research that ahead.
I swear I would never do this. I swear, I mean, he's dead, but on my dad's life, I purposefully didn't research anything. Not a thing. Even when I was tempted to kind of just get an idea of the initial tracks, I was like, don't even look at the Wikipedia page. That to me, I'm not bigging myself up here.
That is pretty significant. And shout out to you for paying...
Shout out to Kate for...
Well, no, I'll get to that.
Okay.
Shout out to you for paying the attention to the nuances and details that I've come to expect from the Virgo that you are, but also equally shout out to an impeccable storyteller.
Yeah, that's the thing. So to me, when you said to me, there's this story, can you pick it up? To me, I thought, when I first listened to it, I thought, is it being in a dream-like state too obvious? Because that's just such an age-old, like, oh, it was all a dream or whatever. But I was like, I think it's that, but there's something more to it. Mm. I don't know. There's been some sort of disequilibrium and she's gone under for some reason. And then it's about her clawing her way out from that. But yes, let's just double check that this is still recording. This is the last time that happened.
I know.
It's fine.
It's recording. Yeah. Okay, you can
edit that. But anyway, yeah, it seemed to me like I was like, stop looking too much for kind of something that's not there and just listen to the words and interpret it as you will. And that's what I did.
Got it. Thank you very much. If again, to the listeners who do know the story of the Ninth Wave, I imagine you've got quite blue balls right now. So I'm going to release you and I'm going to release Drew.
So go on
and
then.
I'm going to tell you what it's about. So the Ninth Wave was actually a painting, I believe, by a Russian painter. And it's a ship at sea in incredibly choppy, tumultuous waves. Right. The story of the Ninth Wave, as told by Kate Bush, is the story, essentially, in one sentence, of a woman stranded at sea. But the level that you went into tells the story of the Ninth Wave. So yes, and Dream of Sheep is her kind of entering this dreamlike state. If you want to put it literally in the story, maybe that kind of, maybe someone's been knocked out unconscious and they're kind of, they haven't regained consciousness yet. And they're kind of dreaming. And then you go through and it's that realization of you are literally stranded alone in the ocean I think she talks about having like a life ring. That's all she's got. And then she starts, as the story goes on, she starts to hallucinate, which is all the voices in Jig of Life. But she finds that resolve and strength to be like, do you know what? I'm going to make it through this night. I'm going to get through. And that's kind of where all the fire and the power comes from. And then into Hello Earth. I don't think I have anything to add to what you said because you nailed it. I shout out to when you were like, is she like stuck in a river? That was the closest where I was like, oh my God, you've got this so
well,
hard.
I imagine that she'd fallen in a lake.
Yeah. It's water.
Yeah.
The song that means the most to me personally is the final one, The Morning Fog. Mm. You again described it so beautifully, but that's meant to be... it's basically, the story is told over the course of a night. So with the morning fog, the sun is rising and she's about to be rescued. And she's like, oh my God, I'm going to tell my family how much I love them. Tell my brother, tell my sister. Now you've nailed that. I'm conscious of time. I do need to talk specifically about the ninth wave in my experience of seeing Kate Bush live. Kate Bush made it very clear for way beyond this, but for when I became a fan of Kate Bush and I was doing my readings and getting absorbed in the history and the blogs and the biographies, it was very, very clear that Kate Bush was not a touring artist. Kate Bush toured, I believe, in 1978. And it was like the pre-Blonde Ambition. She had the microphone on the face. But it was very kind of like theatrical costume story. Mm. It predated those big like pop star world tours. But I think for a few things, she couldn't control the environment of the theater as much as she could control an album. And also one of like the stage crew sadly died by accident on the tour. And I think a few things, she's like, you know what? I don't want to be a touring artist. Oh. And back then, money wasn't touring anyway. Money was the albums.
Yeah.
So she went through all the way through the 80s, didn't tour any albums. 90s, took a big career break, came back for Ariel 2005, which many people say is a sister album to The Hounds of Love, because not only are they exactly 20 years apart, but Ariel is also the only other one of her albums where the first half is standalone songs and the second half is a suite. It's a story in itself. One side is called A Sea of Honey and the other side is called A Sky of Honey, and I don't know which one is which, but the conceptual suite is basically, it tells the story of a pastoral English summer's day, which sounds a bit lame, but it's actually a stunning, beautiful piece, completely on par with the Ninth Wave. Strongly
almost
recommend you listen to
opposite.
That.
Almost the exact opposite.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No trauma or pain, like a really beautiful English summer's day. When she announced that she was actually touring for the first time in literally, I think, 38 years. Now, that just does not happen. I just don't know another artist who toured at some point and then waited 38 years for their... That's like an entire adult life. Anyway, whatever. I was coming to the end of my first year in Australia. I had these plans to go backpacking around Australia and New Zealand. Tickets were released. A friend in the UK, I emailed him my credit card details. He was online at 9 a.m. He bought me tickets. I bought 4 tickets. I couldn't believe it was actually happening. And I cut short my trip to New Zealand by 2 weeks. I had a month planned in New Zealand and I decided to go for 2 weeks so I could make a Kate Bush concert. And I flew from Auckland to London. I landed, I stayed at my friend Sophie's. I slept. The next day was the Kate Bush concert. I met up with my friend Mike, Matthew, who actually introduced me to a lot of Kate Bush. And we went to the Hammersmith Apollo, which was the same location as her first tour 38 years previous.
Not a huge venue.
Quite small. I think she had like 25 dates. And the reason she says that she chose somewhere small is because she wanted to focus on really controlling every aspect of that environment and creating the closest thing a West End musical, not a jukebox musical, but a West End production of music. Mm. She absolutely nailed it. But she opened, the set list was actually divided into four. So the first part was standalone songs. You're seeing a theme here, listeners. The second part was the Ninth Wave in its entirety. The third part was the suite from the Aerial album. I think it's A Sky of Honey. And the fourth part was more standalone songs. So you need to imagine a Kate Bush stan and someone who's stanned her for maybe 20, 30 years more than I have, thinking they will never, ever see this woman who they hold so dearly live. And she not only announces that she'll do a small intimate theatre show, but she performs these two suites, which are just, people just don't do things like that. And she performs them in their entirety. And she breathes the theatrical visual aspects that you nailed when you told that story. She created a visual show of it. And she basically performed the show as a woman stranded at sea. And when you talked about Watching You Without Me, where you talked about her as a ghost going into her family's home and watching them live without her, it sent shivers down my spine because that was what she depicted on stage. She actually had her son, a teenage son, and a man playing her husband on stage. And she, as a ghost or an apparition, watched them living their lives without her. I am shooketh. You nailed it. And
I promise, yeah. I did not look that up.
You but read the synopsis of the show, didn't you?
No, but it's joking. Props to Kate.
Props to Kate.
Because it wasn't that hard. I didn't have to do much digging. It's just like, you know, I've got a literature degree and I could listen to literal words.
Yeah.
But to go back to that, you see, I bet you cried.
I did cry. I actually iconically fell asleep in the Aerial bit. And I say this as someone who's completely appalled and ashamed, but I was so jet lagged.
And also, if the whole vibe of that suite is like a beautiful, lovely summer's day, maybe it's what Kate would have wanted.
Yes, and my friend Matthew had bought me this massive gin and lemonade. And also our friend Christopher was there who actually runs a series of incredible club nights in the UK called Wuthering Nights. he's done them in Manchester at Bethnal Green Working Men's Club. Mm-hmm. Kate Bush masks everywhere. And I was actually a door bitch, iconically, for one of those nights. And this brings us right back to when you said, you know, we were just talking about people our age loving Kate Bush. That was so affirming to literally be the door bitch for a Kate Bush night at Bethnal Green Working Men's Club and see so many people of our age covered in like ivy and Wuthering Heights-ness, but there for that appreciation of not only Kate Bush, because I think the DJs were like, play one Kate Bush song and then two songs by people who were inspired by Kate.
Got it.
But loved all of that kind of catalogue and that genre and
just white chiffon everywhere.
Everywhere. Candles. Yeah. And, yeah.
Ivy.
But it's like, it's a community. It's a community of outsiders. She's had a long record of commercial success. But she is othered. She's other.
She is.
And that's been a theme throughout her entire work. To her detriment, you know, people will make fun of her for being like quirky or odd or weird. She's like a synonym for like the weird, quirky, like English girl who does the music and is a bit airy away with the fairies. Diana Vickers, shout out to Diana Vickers. But she creates music which speaks to people who don't find themselves entirely in the mainstream.
And
that's what's queer.
And any person that will be in a room and there's a slightly elevated section, and as soon as they see that slightly elevated section, they say to themselves, that's a stage. Mm. And they jump on it and they start performing. That is to me what I feel Kate Bush was as a kid. She was like, I am going to put, you know, we spoke a lot about her, like the fact that she was kind of just told, yeah, turn it up, we love you. Yeah. I think that's because she was this theatrical, like, I'm going to put on a performance for you. And that has just been the red thread that's run throughout her entire career.
That and what runs into people like Bjork's and Tori Amos's career, very, very similar upbringings, in that they are those extroverted people who want to perform on the stage for the people and share their art, but they're also incredible introverts who want to craft and create their art at their own pace, on their own terms, and ain't no one going to tell them what to do with their music. And again, that's what I think is queer. Yeah. Because queer people look to that, to women who do have to do the boardroom chats with the record label executives and would have had to do a lot more in their earlier career than they do when they're mature artists, but to a degree still have to answer to other people, but make the stand time and time again. I think I mentioned this in the Bjork episode, but it sticks with me to this day that Bjork talks, this is more about maybe the state of the record industry, but Bjork mentions that each album she produces, her record label will put out a press release to go with it, and they'll always say, it's her most commercial album yet. And she's like, I've done like 8 albums, and actually, objectively, they've got progressively weirder and weirder. Why are you still creating this story that I'm finally making something commercial? Is it just to kind of make people feel safe about listening to my music? It could just be to sell more records, but is it like, oh, she's finally done something that we can all listen to? And it's like, these women, Kate, Bjork, Tori, PJ Harvey, so on so forth, actually don't give a shit. Fiona Apple, they don't care, and they attract an audience regardless, maybe in part because people want to listen to someone who doesn't care what people think they should make. Again, that's what's queer.
Do you know what? And I know we're going over time, so I'll wrap it up quickly, but I think that you've just tapped into something really, really interesting about, you know how we've spoken since episode fucking one, what makes a gay icon a gay icon? And there's a million different answers. A part of it, I think, is the duality of being able to, as you just so perfectly put it, sit in that boardroom and advocate for yourself and say, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to do this. And then be that weirdo and be able to straddle those two worlds, because as queer people, we are so often having to push our own, for want of a better phrase, and not in any kind of sinister way, but stand up for and push our own agenda in a fucking straight world where we have to play by the rules and like act the part. Act the fool girl so that we can infiltrate in ways that are like creative and exciting.
And then you find your audience.
Yes.
Yes. Love that. We've nailed it.
The only other thing I'm going to say is this. There's another reason you love Kate Bush.
Yeah.
Strip out the music. Sorry.
Yeah.
Reverse that. Strip out the lyrics.
Yeah.
A lot of just that music, less of the sort of more heavy stuff, more of the, let's say, a morning fog, let's say a sort of a more chilled out cloud busting, wouldn't be out of place in Epcot, doll.
No, you're right. At that specific time. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was one of the first people to use that machine, that specific synthesizer machine. I think it was called the Fairlight, and she was very kind of pioneering in that use, and then it went on to be used by the people. It is kind of sort of CFCF rising,
very Beverly, rising, Glenn Copeland,
all of that. So yeah, love that. Now we've got a very short amount of time. I just want to briefly ask you, do you have any other Kate Bush songs that you love, like what we mentioned earlier? Do you like, you know, do you have a soft spot for, like, you know, people will always say, what about Wuthering Heights? And I'm like, she literally made that song when she was 16 years old. Okay.
I'd say probably my favourite one, not on this album, is probably The Man with the Child in His Eyes.
Beautiful.
Only because, there's also, what's that album from?
The first one.
Oh.
The Kick Inside.
The Kick Inside. Yes. And that, again, is what I meant when I'm talking about mothers. And it's like, there's something going on with her and mothers. Anyway, that album was one of the ones I listened to on my trip, and I got a ferry from Sweden to Finland, and I woke up and saw ahead of me this just vast blue and like Scandinavian green, and listened to that song.
Beautiful.
And it was just stunning.
That is gorgeous.
Yeah, so that gorgeous for me. And also, I when I was in Berlin when I was like 18 a million years ago, I went for this one crazy night, like a bit of a sort of lost in translation, let's never do this again because it's never going to happen, to the Berghain with this like Hetty boy. And like we, close your ears, mum, but like took a couple of sweets, ate too many sweets and had too many fizzy drinks, had this crazy like Berghain experience. And then on the, at the metro station going home, he put an earphone in my ear and played me that song, The Man with the Child in His Eyes. It said nothing. And then we got off and got on separate trains and just said, like, I'll probably never see you again, but like, thanks for
that's
this, like,
so beautiful.
Yeah,
that's really, really gorgeous.
So there's something going on with European travel in that song to me.
Very much so. Yeah. And the morning fog is also very much to me kind of coming out of the Berghain and like on like a snowy, like snowy Berlin day.
They're very there.
I made it. I'm alive.
Yeah, the Berghain is actually that stormy.
That's the ninth
shipwreck.
Wave.
Yeah, yes. That's the ninth wave.
Yes.
Yeah.
How okay.
about you?
Well, can't crap on forever, but we know how much she means to me. I really recommend that if you did enjoy The Hounds of Love, you listen to the follow-up album, which is called The Sensual World. Beautiful blending of kind of literature and romance and sex, actually. The song The Sensual World is very, very sexy. Shout out to Erotica. The comeback album, Ariel.
I've never listened to that. I'm going to check that one out.
Really, really beautiful album. Probably the most special Kate Bush song to me, other than any that we've already talked about, is Moments of Pleasure. I've told Drew about this a lot separately. Mm-hmm. It's from the last album she made before she took a big break, The Red Shoes. Moments of Pleasure is about... she seemed to be maybe in her mid to late 30s at that point and was starting to lose people in her life who meant a lot to her, whether it was producers from old albums or musicians or actually her mother. And it's kind of a dedication to those moments, quite literally, that are just crystallized in time. So you putting a headphone in your ear with a guy that you met one night and never saw again at Berghain, but those really perfect moments on holiday, or the very simple moments with family, laughter, poignancy, melancholy, joy, that will never repeat, and there's no desire to repeat, and they are to be appreciated as a moment of pleasure locked in time. And there's a very special line in it about diving off a rock into another moment. And it makes me think of Gordon's Bay in Sydney, where I've got so many special memories, but in particular, the first ever weekend that I had with Tom. And I remember being on a rock at Gordon's Bay and thinking, I get it. Like, this weekend will never be repeated. And we don't want to repeat it, but I'll never forget moments like this. And it's about living in the moment and appreciating your past.
I love that. And what a beautiful note to end on. Should we live in the moment and go and get ourselves some food and a little bit of Bolly?
Yeah, a bit Dolly. Of Bolly Dolly.
A bit of Bolly.
A bit of Bolly Dolly.
Darling.
Yeah.
Love that.
I think this has been a really good journey for the two of us.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you,
Kate. Also, really quick shout out to her cover of Sexual Healing
by
Marvin Gaye. It's so good.
So good.
And I love the way she goes, sexual. It's so
healing.
Like, it's also just like, and it's like
the Irish stuff. I'm gonna do a bit of a playlist. On this playlist, I'm gonna put in my favorite Kate Bush songs about being Irish.
Okay.
And Sexual Healing is gonna be one of them. And then there's more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
All right.
Thank you. Welcome to Cycle 5. We're in person now. Who knows what's gonna happen next week or next fortnight? But we love you. Keep on keeping on and stream Hounds of Love now. And, you know all the Instagram and Facebook stuff. Except for I've changed my handle to With All Due Respect. Mm. So that's worth paying due diligence to. And other than that, yeah. Bye.
I still dream of a good night.
I wake up crying. You're making rain. And you're just in